Welcome to the Bloody Broads Pod. We're your Bloody Broads. I'm Bhavna Sharma.
And I'm Jamie Howard. We are your horror guides from page to screen and everything in between. And this week we're covering the Stephen King novella that really just fucked both of us up.
Oh my God.
Big Driver.
Yes. Oh my gosh. We are kicking off our Stephen King month. And if you don't like it, too bad. But we're kicking it off with, like Jamie said, with the novella Big Driver from Full Dark, No Stars. I forget what year that came out. I want to say like 2016.
Relatively recent.
Relatively recent. And the only time I've ever seen it mentioned in pop culture is on Riverdale, actually.
Same, actually, yeah.
Where I believe it was Veronica's character that said,
yes,
like, I'm going to go Full Dark, No Stars on your ass, which should tell you what the theme of this book is, which is revenge.
It is. And we do love a good revenge story. And I think we both enjoy a good revenge film. But I got to say, this one had, I think this one makes you question the ethics of a revenge story.
Yeah, it does. And especially with this one in particular, because it's like, it's one where we're like, good for her. But at the same time, we're like, would we have done the same?
No, because I would have potentially gone to the authorities with that much evidence.
It was kind of overwhelming.
Yeah. So, all right. This is our textbook spoiler alert moment. This is where we get into, you know, if you haven't read it, you should go read it and then listen to this.
Yeah.
So she chooses not to go to the authorities about being raped and brutally, brutally assaulted.
Yes.
After running over some debris in the road after giving her author chat at a local library, which let's talk about the choice for her to have a upper middle class vocation.
Yeah, like, so she is a writer. She's a comfortable writer. I believe they say she's, like, one of those writers that will always make money. I forget. It's like a pulp writer almost.
Yeah, so she does these what's called cozy mysteries, which always end with a nice, clean solution to the murder. But there's always a body. And she even says in the book, there's a body but no blood, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. There's this idea of, you know, there's no bloody, gory scene, but they do find a body. And then the knitting club finds the body and manages to solve the murder. And she mentions it multiple times, by the way.
Yes. Yes, she does. And it's almost like Murder, She Wrote, wouldn't you say?
It's exactly Murder, She Wrote. So it's the Knitting Society books. So she's kind of like, I read these cozy mysteries and it's always like so-and-so and the body in the garden or the body in the manor or the body in the bakery.
Yes.
And I do love them, but it's very stereotypical. And yeah, she just, that's her whole thing.
Yeah.
Is that she writes these books. And so she goes and gives these talks to these library groups to build her retirement fund, which, you know, we understand.
Listen, get that bread.
Yeah, we understand. And so she goes and gives this talk to this, it's called like Brown Bags and Books.
Something like that. It was something really cute that I can't remember.
It's like Brown Bags and Books group. And so she goes and gives a talk and then she meets this librarian who's a very butch lesbian woman. And she notes that several times in her.
Yeah, to the point where I'm just like, Uncle Steve, are you okay?
Right, like we get it. She's a tall, thick woman with the shaved head. We get it. And so on her way back from giving this talk, her expedition, which like very early 2000s,
yes,
breaks down and a guy stops to help her to change her tire. And he winds up raping her and brutally assaulting her, which trigger warning again for this whole story. It's pretty brutal, the description of the assault and the rape.
Yeah, in true Stephen King fashion, he took it a step too far.
Yes.
A step too far. It was to the point where I was just like, look, Stephen, like, I understand show don't tell, but you could have just told in this situation.
He's kind of the king in this, pun not intended, he's the king of this situation with, like, he brutally describes her rape, and for me, which I was not that level of raped, but like it's truly triggering.
Yeah. Like I fortunately have been very lucky to not have been sexually assaulted in that great detail or in that way in general.
Yeah.
I'm extremely lucky and I recognize my privilege in that situation, but at the same time, it doesn't make it any less uncomfortable to read.
It was pretty intense. So it describes her being picked up by this guy who's like 6'6". He's got like this brown cap with bleach spots on it, these overalls. He drags her into this abandoned country store and brutally assaults her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to take a break.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't read that in one go. Like the other novellas in that series, I could, like 1922, I breezed through. Like
same.
A bunch of the others, I like breezed through.
Absolutely.
The Big Driver, I actually had to be like, I'm going to close you for now and I'm going to pick you up tomorrow when I feel a little more refreshed.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And so she gets assaulted and then she wakes up in this drainage ditch, which has the bodies of his other victims in it, which is a whole other level of just horrifying.
Because he's not just a rapist, he's a serial rapist.
Right, and a serial killer, because all of his other victims are dead, except for her. And she decides, all right, I'm going to be the survivor. I'm going to take care of this.
Yeah.
She goes home and she pieces together the fact that it's his mom helping him.
Yeah, that was the bit where I was just like, oh, that's a twist. Oh.
I mean, can I say something a little controversial?
Of course. This is a safe space.
This comes across as very like hashtag boy mom to me. Am I wrong?
No.
Every time someone's like, hashtag boy mom, I'm like, oh, you're going to defend him until the ends of the earth. Which, like, if you're listening to this and you're, like, getting your hackles raised, maybe that's a sign. But, I mean, truly, like, she took it to the extreme. And I just, if you're going to acknowledge that your son can do horrific things, this is the time to do so.
I have met a few hashtag boy moms in my life. And for my own safety, I'm not going to say who they are. And I don't know if they listen to this pod, but if they ever come across it, like they do come across the promotion for this pod, but
whoops,
I doubt they'll listen to this, but I've come across them in my life and they very much do not raise their kids to be like this in the extreme sense.
Yeah.
Very entitled, very like, what's mine is mine and you can't stop me from having it. Whatever I deem to be mine is mine, whether that, you know, that piece of paper towel over there is mine, whether this mic is mine, this computer is mine, this headset is mine.
Right.
Like it's exhausting. It's very scary.
Well, and that's the thing, right? Is like, I think Stephen King is really good with doing satire that relates to the current wave.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote this again in what? It was pre-2016.
Pre-2016. I'm going to look this up first.
Okay. But it was like after 2010.
Yes, definitely.
So it would have been while I was in college. And that was kind of the peak of the Me Too movement getting its first wave and everyone being like, well, my son would never.
2010.
Oh, 2010. It was November 5th, 2010. So I had freshly graduated high school and really telling our age on this. But I say all that to say, like, if you were a woman in her early, you know, late teens, early 20s at that time, it was a lot of the, how do I want to say this? The moms coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's definitely it. And it's like, it was the pre-girl dad movement for sure. Which is a whole other thing. I'm like, let's not, we don't have time to unpack all that, don't give. But this was like this, like you said, this was like the beginning of the moms coming out of the woodwork and being like, my son.
It was a lot of that. It was a lot of the backlash that's still continuing to this day, to be honest. There's a lot of backlash to the, you know, what people consider the Me Too movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of disgusts me that they consider it a movement that can be like tracked in a moment in time instead of what it is, which is people in the film industry, the television industry standing up for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this kind of country bumpkin who's massive and who reminds me a lot of the characters in The Green Mile by Stephen King.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yep. I can totally see him.
Yeah. And he brutally, you know, sexually assaults her. Mm-hmm. And physically assaults her, leaves her in this drainage pipe. She realizes she's not alone in the drainage pipe. She climbs out. She goes to a roadside bar called the Stagger Inn. I-N-N-N.
I did cackle the first time. Right? Because I was just like, I was at that point where I was just like, I'm so into the rabbit hole with this story to the point where I was just like, okay, this is actually hilarious.
Yeah, Stephen King definitely knows how to deliver the punchlines in some really screwed up situations.
He does.
So she goes to the Stag Run, calls a limo service, goes to a gas station where she is hallucinating.
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to be a little real on Maine, you guys, if that's okay. I have never had PTSD-related hallucinations, but I have had flashbacks.
Okay.
Have you not had hallucinations?
I have definitely had hallucinations. Like I said, I've never been in this specific situation or anywhere in this wheelhouse, but given the situations I have been in, I have. And it to the point where it's very brief for me.
Right.
It's very much like the, okay.
I'm good. In reality.
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good. I can ground myself. Luckily, I can ground myself very easily and yeah. very quickly. But for that moment, which can feel like 84 years, it can feel like 2 seconds.
Right.
I have been very like, oh, fuck.
Right. And so she's at this. So he sets us in the weird, like, I wanted to say like 2006, 2007 era. Because she has a cell phone, but it's not enough. She also has a separate TomTom GPS. Which he notes the name of multiple times.
Well, in 2010, BlackBerry would have been reigning supreme as the
high-end BlackBerry Pearl.
Phone. Yeah. Like, I didn't have a BlackBerry at that point. I had the Nokia. It looked like it had a camera on the back. Like, it looked like a camera. So, if you, like, tilted it sideways.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It looked like a camera. But it didn't. It wasn't a camera. But, like, I had one of those. But it was, it was just before my BlackBerry. The smaller one, not the curve, not the whatever, but it was like the newest wave, which was
Bold.
Yeah. Either way, it was at a time where smartphones were just on the cusp. So like you said, it's not enough for you to like look something up. It's not enough for you to like Google something.
You had to have a TomTom GPS or like I had a Garmin at the time because I was, again,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. 2011 was my freshman year of college. So, anyways, it's just really interesting to me the way that technology plays a role in this series.
Mm-hmm.
This whole novella, but especially the story in the novella, because she can use her cell phone to call for help. She calls a limousine service, but she has to go to a gas station to call the limousine service because Big Driver, who is the
son of the butch lesbian librarian.
He's the son of the butch lesbian librarian who sexually assaulted her. And left her for dead in the ditch. He takes her, I mean, everything, her cash, her cards, her purse, whatever, which that reveal towards the end of the book is what really screwed me up was the fact that his brother was in on it.
That was the one that fucked me up because his mom being in on it, I understood because she was sus from the beginning.
Oh, she was super sus because she was like, oh, I'm just going to pick this random person to be a last minute fill-in. And, you know.
Yeah, she's just a Pulp Fiction writer. She's really fine.
It was a lot of undermining what women writers do, which I think is a whole other discussion, like, in and of itself.
Like, on a side tangent, like, as much as, like, I believe that we should be lifting each other up as women, whatever that definition includes,
absolutely.
Which is a very broad definition if you're a bloody broad. very broad. As broad as you can think.
Extremely.
Trans women or women. But as much as I believe in lifting each other up and unity and all of that kind of stuff, like when it comes to stories like this, when it comes to situations like this, it does become a little sus.
So here's my whole thing, right? Is like, if you're a woman who is so against femininity that you are only accepting this like very straight and narrow, pun intended, form of being a woman, where you're a TERF or you're a lesbian who's a TERF. Like, we don't support.
We all know a few.
Yeah, we don't support TERFs at all.
No, we do
but
not.
But it's really interesting to me that, like, Stephen King chose to make the villain of this book, the two villains, three villains of this book, this novella.
This family of villains.
Right. This whole idea of, like, being anti-feminine.
Yes. Like, you get that obvious, the most obvious sense you get that from is the mother.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, the men. Sorry to sound very cynical of the world, but like the men you kind of expect it from. Because if you find a man that isn't like that, then you're like,
I mean, you're lucky. Good. Yeah.
You're lucky. But like coming from the mother figure, coming from the parental figure in this family, who's very physically rejecting of femininity or of.
Well, she had two boys instead of girls as children. Yes. And then she was like, I'm going to defend my boys to the end. And yes. then finding out that she was covering up not only Little Driver's perversions to be a sexual predator, but also covering up Big Driver's proclivity to help his brother.
Yep.
I mean.
Yeah, that's a twist in itself that Big Driver ends up being the other brother that's complicit.
That
you would think Big Driver is the rapist.
He is.
You'd
not.
Be wrong. You'd be wrong. Like, it's been a while since I've read the book. Remind me, was he the one that was in the gas station?
No. So what happened is Little Driver would wear Big Driver's hat and overalls.
That's it.
To look like him.
Yep.
So and then Big Driver would be out as part of the company driving the 18-wheeler, making deliveries.
Mm-hmm.
And Little Driver would dress up as his big brother to do these sexual assaults, these rapes, he would literally trigger warning. So skip ahead about 30 seconds if you don't want to hear the description.
Mm-hmm.
He would, all right, 3, 2, 1. He would brutally assault these women and then he would ditch their body in the drainage pipe and steal their like cash goods, their designer purses, that kind of stuff.
Their ID, which was key.
Right. So he would give Big Driver the monetary value of things, but he would get to actually do the physical assaults.
Right. That was Little Driver. Big Driver was the one that ended up covering it all up.
Right.
And having the alibi for Little Driver because, hey, listen, I was actually in Derry when this was happening.
Right. Okay. So if you're listening, this is where kind of the trigger warning can kind of soften or end.
Yes.
I appreciate that Stephen King in 2016 had evolved to the point where he's willing to talk about sort of, I mean, you know, realistic sexual assaults without being graphic, which is more than I can say for a lot of male movie directors.
Yeah. In 2020, even now in 2022.
Yeah. But I don't know. There's something that I always struggle with when it comes to sexual assault written by a male. I will say this. Stephen King did course correct his subtly racist, you know, microaggression yes. notes, especially in this novella. In every story that's in this novella, he does yes. point out when something is named for a racist stereotype or the fact that it's in the Northeast. And so they mention like, hey, this used to be an Indian reservation. Here's why that's not okay. Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But we're not excusing his previous not so great track record with that.
No, like Stephen King, here's the thing is like he was always great and progressive with like maybe one pocket of society.
Right.
And like he would be very progressive in that sense.
Like, right.
For more on that, listen to Brian Fuller's episode on KingCast about, I think it's
so
like,
good.
It was something like Queer for King mm-hmm. is I believe what that episode was called. But like, whereas like he was very progressive for the queer community in that sense where it's like, okay, cool. You were very progressive with that community in the 80s, in like the 70s and the 90s. But then you can see his progression if you've read his work from then onwards. And then it is kind of sad that it took until the 2010s.
To get there.
But he did get there is the point.
The point.
He did get there.
We do love
there.
Uncle Steven still.
We do.
But this book in particular, I mean, and we'll talk about this. So if you're listening to this, we are going to record a bonus Patreon episode.
Yes.
On Smile, which will come out around the same time as this.
Yes.
This weekend was basically like, let's traumatize Jamie weekend, presented to you by Bhavna Sharma. Because we read this, and then we went and saw Smile, which, oh my God.
Listen, this was about my second or third time watching Smile. I know. Was kind of good, but I had to support my bronchitis.
I was shook. But yeah, how do you think, I mean, I don't know how you felt about it, but how did you feel him handling the aftermath of being assaulted with her decision not to tell the police?
I think he got better at it over time. Like if you read any of his earlier novels, like your Rose Matters, your Dolores Claiborne, your
yes.
like, you know, those novels from the early 90s, late 80s, yes. If I'm dating myself correctly. He got much better. And in terms of revenge, because those were also revenge stories.
They were.
He got much better. Like, I kind of found this more as a character that I could possibly relate to. I don't have the privilege where I could go and have the fucking cojones to go and shoot my rapist. I would have definitely gone to the authorities as much as an ACAB person as I am myself. I recognize my boundaries and what I can do with them and how much harm I would be putting myself in if I could do that.
Right.
And as much true crime and as much like police procedurals fucking at me that I take in.
We're a fan.
Dun, dun. But like, as much as I consume that kind of media, I know I'm not capable of the perfect crime. I know I'm not capable of covering that up and messing myself up for my future. So long story short, no, I would not follow this character's progressive path the way Stephen King laid it out. But do I think that character would, given her privilege, her station in life, her coverability, I guess,
yeah,
in this situation? Fuck yeah.
Agreed. Well, I think until we continue these thoughts, how about we take a commercial break?
Yes, I think that's great. Stay tuned for some more free thoughts, and we'll see you after this.
So you said this really, I think, introspective comment of, you know, it was her station in life that allowed her to track down her predator. And I think that's something that a lot of good for her horror doesn't address.
No.
Because even with Promising Young Woman, mm-hmm. which this reminded me of.
Very much the same lane.
Right. She just decides to like go after bad guys, which I will always love them for casting Bo Burnham as the bad guy. Yes. Because that tracks.
Yeah, that does track. We love as the you. Quote unquote capital N nice guy.
Right. Like we love you, Bo, but that tracks.
That tracks. You and Nicholas Braun could make like a little duo of capital N nice guys.
Correct. So in this movie, she decides to go after her rapist. And speaking as someone who has been assaulted, and again, being very vulnerable on Maine, because it's someone I knew, I don't think I would be able to. But if it was someone like a stranger, to be honest, as a woman, there are so many times where I'm just like waiting for permission to go berserker.
Yes.
I would absolutely fuck somebody up. If someone's listening to this and being like, oh my God, she's crazy. But if you're a woman, you're being very honest with yourself right now. And you're like, all right, think of all the men that have done you wrong and that have been downright cruel to you. And if you're sitting here and telling me like, oh, I would never get back at them the way they got back at me, I feel like you're not being honest with yourself. I'm just not evolved past the point of revenge. I don't know.
Honestly, take this beyond sexual assault for just a moment, which I understand. Like, again, I understand my privilege of not being sexually assaulted. Have I been sexually harassed? Every fucking yesterday.
Absolutely.
This morning. Like, it happens every fucking day. But let me just go beyond that for a moment. Take any kind of context where you as a visible, insert whatever here, woman, queer, person of color.
All three.
Any kind of harassed medium of person.
Right.
Like, I am a very forgiving person. I am a very...
Gracious
person. I'm a very Same. Like, hey, there are multiple angles to every situation and you will never know all of them kind of person. But I am not evolved past, I will fucking fuck you up for like,
listen, there's been
ruining
so many times,
my calm and my right. peace.
There's been so many times, again, as a woman, where I'm just like, please give me a reason. Do you know what I mean? Like, our Patreons that are able to see a video of this can see my facial reaction. But, like, truly, there's been so many times where I've been under pressure and I'm like, all right, what can I get away with getting out of this safely? Because even, like, you and I both go to see music live a lot.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And
we've both seen it this month.
Right. Walking back home from, like, a concert to a train stop or a bus stop or an Uber or whatever, our boyfriend's picking us up, whatever, mm-hmm. there's been someone there to make us feel uncomfortable. And it makes me so, I'm just at my limit with it. And I feel like that's where, you know, she was in the story, where she was just at her limit and she was a berserker. And she goes to, she gets sexually assaulted. She makes it down to like the local, you know, roadhouse to call herself a limousine service, which she has because she is privileged. Listen, and which she acknowledges in the book.
Yeah, like, which was big because, like, listen, if you can call a limousine service to get yourself out, like, listen, most of us can't even access Uber or Lyft, depending.
She was in upstate New York, right?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like, and as my fellow Southern Ontarians and upstate New Yorkers can attest to, that place is nightmare fuel.
I have not been to that particular area of upstate New York, but I have been to Buffalo, and I'm used to pre-Uber Buffalo.
I'm so sorry.
Well, I mean, it's fine now that I'm an adult and Uber exists. But she says multiple times, even while she's, you know, blacked out from being given a concussion from her assault, that she recognizes the privilege of being able to call a limousine service where they have her Amex on file in upstate New York. So to me, this gives such a depth of character writing with King, because all of his protagonists up until If It Bleeds had been male.
That's very true. And unless they, and his female protagonists were very much the Rose Madder, Dolores Claiborne, Carrie, Misery. Like, you had a very binary female protagonist, which is either they were the abused, under, you know, represented, stepped upon part of humanity, or the straight up, like, I have crossed my limit of sanity and I will fuck you up. Well, give me the ending I deserve in my favorite novel.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that for a second, because that's what happens in this, right? Like, she crosses the threshold of what's considered quote-unquote mentally healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so funny is a lot of hyper-masculine men, especially of the conservative variety, talk a big talk of like, well, why did you let them touch you? Why didn't you go berserk? Why didn't you defend yourself? Well, if someone did that to my wife, I would beat their ass. Without considering the real life repercussions of that.
There's so many real life repercussions that even when you're a person going through that situation, you're thinking of.
100%.
You're thinking of it, because do you not think that if you were in that situation and you thought you could comfortably, quote unquote, beat their ass or anything of that ilk, you wouldn't fucking do it in the moment?
My whole thing is like, if I'm trying to protect myself and remain alive, I know my instincts would kick in and I'd be like kicking, screaming, whatever, hollering. But that doesn't mean that I wouldn't also potentially freeze or fawn, which I think people forget are trauma responses.
That's it. Like, not to get real on Maine, the closest thing I've ever experienced, and I am okay, and I realize that I am okay explaining this on the Maine, is because I prevented it from happening. But long story short, there was a situation where I was coming, I think I've told you this before as well. Like, I was coming home on the bus late at night, like not even that late. It was like 12:30.
Yeah.
Not even that fucking late, especially in a big city. If you're someone that listens in a big city, especially Toronto, you know, 12:30, it's not even last call yet. You're good to go. I was coming home and I sat on a bus that was pretty empty except for me, maybe two or three people, but I chose to sit near the back because that's where I like to sit.
Yeah.
I don't have to justify myself. I just sat near the back. And this guy comes, and he was presenting his mail, comes and sits right beside me when there is a whole empty bus. He decides to put his hand on my thigh.
Absolutely not.
Under the guise of, oh no, I'm drunk, I'm just looking for my wallet. And so I remove his hand, I give him one shot. And this is even more gracious than I would like to be. But in that situation, listen, in that situation, you're thinking like, how far is he willing to go?
Right. Because especially if he's bigger than you.
That's it. He was bigger than me. He was like at least 6'2". I'm 5'7" for context.
Immediately, like, no.
Immediately, no.
He's a whole foot taller than me, so no.
Yeah, no thank you. And he was like, and then, you know, and the bus driver's so far up. This is where I'm going like, fuck, should I have not sat in the back? Which, no. Sit That's wherever the hell you works. Want. That's not how this works. Sit wherever the hell you want on the bus.
No.
So I luckily, on my I had a satchel at the time, and I had a Mjolnir, which is Thor's hammer, in solid metal. And so I had it on my opposite side because I was sitting on the bus and I didn't want it to take up the seat because I thought at 12:30 at night, no one would fucking sit beside me. So I unhook it and I subtly move it into my other hand, like my other hand here, if you can see on the Patreon. And I kind of have it like, you know how they tell you to have keys in the middle of
like
your
claws,
hand?
Yeah.
Like claws. So I have it here, but I have it kind of subtly, like pretend this is my thigh, just kind of like this.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, if this guy tries again, I'm ready to go.
You're good.
So he fucking tries again. And like, I'm 5 stops away from my place at this point. And he puts his hand up a little higher on my thigh. And I'm like, nope. Whack. I fucking whacked his hand. And it, like, I could hear the crunch. Not to go all Stephen King on the mane, but like,
fine.
I could hear that crunch, that sickly sweet sound of meat and bone colliding. Sorry, guys.
I just made a face for those of you not on the Patreon.
Yeah. And like he goes, ah, and that's when the bus driver stops. Because he wasn't going to stop if I yelled. Would he have stopped? Who the fuck knows? But like he stops and he goes, everything okay back there? And the guy was like, oh, my stop. And he like gets off he knows at that point. I threw those pants out, by the way. The butt specs were not worth it. But again, to get back on to my main point here is that, like, I knew what I could do in that moment.
Yeah.
I knew what I could do in that moment. And I knew that, like, if I was going to be whatever, there were cameras around me. I was hyper aware of the cameras on the bus. I was hyper aware that, like, I was being recorded and the closest thing to assault to me was being recorded at the time.
Yeah.
But if there were no cameras, if there was none of that, I don't think I would have had the balls.
Well, and like, that's the whole thing is like, I mean, far be it from me to claim myself as like a well-known person right now, but like, there comes this time when you have to be like, all right, here's where I am in my career. Here is my personal safety. Like, where am I willing to draw the line of being public about this kind of thing? Mostly because of times like that, where it's like, all right, am I seen as doing too much, saying too much, being too much of a reaction, when in reality, a man shouldn't be, anybody, regardless of gender, should not be putting their hands on you, period, if you didn't want them to. And I think that's why I connected so hard to the rest of her story, where she decides to hunt down the mom, because she puts two and two together, right? That the mom has something to do with it, that she's been hiding the connection. She's been helping little driver hide his murders because of something with her ex-husband, which do you think he killed himself on purpose?
Oh, 100%.
Really? 100%. I think she had something to do with it. I think she pushed him into
the
doing
mother?
It. Yeah.
I could see it. I could see her being in a situation. You know what? I could see it. I could see her being in a situation where she was just like, I fucking protected you this whole
time. That's
what I'm
saying. Yeah.
You fucking shit for brains. What the fuck?
Well, because again, she was very buzz cut. Like, I'm going to my way or the highway you.
Yeah.
And some of that's, you know, our interpretation of the novella, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think this is a good this whole story was a good examination of like, what happens when you have the chance for revenge and do you take it? As a survivor, I don't know that I would be able to, given that the repercussions are so real. But I also don't trust American police, as most people don't, to handle this kind of thing.
I don't trust Canadian police either.
Right.
For the record.
So, I mean, you know, your thoughts, because I'm feeling a lot of things right now.
Honestly, like, to bring it back to what I went through, if I knew I wasn't, if I didn't have the assurance that, like, my original assault, because it is an assault. Like,
100%.
I've battled with it for a long time where it's like, I know that other people have been through worse, and like, it, and I know it doesn't necessarily belittle what I've been through, but that doesn't make it feels, still fits the definition.
Yeah.
It was unwanted touching in a sexual nature, and that's what it was. And I didn't want it and I stood up for it, but would I have, if I didn't have that safety blanket of, I didn't need them to believe me because there was proof. And that's what I struggle with personally, is that like, and I struggled with it in society as a whole, where it's like, if I didn't have that safety blanket of, there was infallible proof that this happened.
Right, infallible evidence, yeah.
Infallible evidence. It wasn't, what was she wearing? Did she ask for it? What time of night was it at? Was she at a bar that night? Where are her receipts? Like, did she make flirtatious eye contact? Did she have a drink that night? For the record, stone cold sober. I wouldn't have been able to make eye contact with that knuckle if I wasn't. But you get what I'm saying, right?
Oh, like,
if I didn't have that safety blanket, and the protagonist definitely did not have that safety blanket. Most people we know that have been assaulted do not.
I mean, she was in the middle of nowhere with no police, no cameras, nothing.
No GPS, nothing. She just went on the say-so of the mother being like, hey, by the way, I know your GPS will take you down this road.
I'm going to send you this way.
But you should go that way because I'm a local and you should trust me because I'm a local. Did I mention I'm a local?
Evil asshole does it take to send your...
This is why I don't trust boy moms.
We're going to get so much email on this. I mean, can we talk about it for a second though? Like, so she ends up accidentally killing Big Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Who is... covering ? For a little driver.
Yeah.
But at first I was like, you know, oh, she accidentally killed him, that this is going to turn out to be like an anti revenge fantasy kind of story. And then it gets revealed that, oh, he had something to do with it because he requested their underwear and their purses, their quality things that could be sold.
His fucking cut of the assault.
Right.
Which is, I'm only laughing because how fucked up.
It's so fucked up. I just, you know, it. There comes a time when like, and King speaks to this in his novella,
mm-hmm.
where your inaction becomes a choice, mm-hmm. and it becomes an action. And holy shit, this one in particular, I think it's just a good reminder of like, if you're protecting a rapist or a serial sexual assaulter, or just anyone who's sexually assaulted someone in general, you're part of the problem.
100%.
And I hope that makes you feel bad.
I'm not accusing any of our listeners, because far be it. But
No.
Take this moment to just take a second. Think about everybody in your life, regardless of gender, regardless of anything, and think about their behavior and if you've ever been complicit. I'm not saying you can do anything about the past, but just take stock of the people in your life, because I know I've had to in my life, and there've been people I've been very close to, people I've loved.
Right.
Or I've had to like kind of rethink if I even, one, want to be associated with that person. Two, if I even want to support their behavior by association, just by like some being in their lives. Like, I'm not saying that people like that aren't worth rehabilitating, but just take that moment to think, like, be critical of the people in your lives. Blood doesn't mean shit.
My whole
friendship
thing is like,
doesn't mean shit.
My whole thing is like, can they be rehabilitated? That's not on me to say, because I'm not a licensed psychiatrist. I do have a psych degree, but that's not my.
No, but even if they can or can't, can you abide being in their lives?
That's what I'm saying.
Until they can, because rehabilitation is something that depends on the individual themselves. That has nothing to do with you. You push someone towards something, like I've learned this the hard way in my entire life, is that you cannot push somebody to do something that is good for them if they don't see it. So is that worth it for you? This is a point where I would definitely say be fucking selfish and save yourself.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to give my final thoughts, if that's okay with you.
Go fucking nuts.
All right. So for those that don't know, this is our first episode ever recorded together, side by side.
Yes.
My final thoughts are that this novella, this short story, is an allegory perfectly made for current discourse when it comes to who's allowed to have justice and who's allowed to have revenge, and what's the difference between justice and revenge.
Mm-hmm.
How do you yourself feel about payback versus justice and what's the difference? I urge you to make that, you know, difference in your mind, self-examine, that kind of thing.
100%.
I fully believe that she did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, if a guy brutally sexually assaulted me and left me in the gutter, I would have probably pretty strong feelings about that. So I can't speak from experience because, again, that's never, thank God, happened.
Mm-hmm.
But minor, quote unquote, air quotes, minor, more sexual assault has happened. And there's a lot of people that I wish not so great things for. If you have no problem with that, I hate to tell you, but there's probably other women in your life who are survivors who think the same.
Yep.
This episode got unexpectedly heavy very quickly. Bhavna, do you want to give your final thoughts?
My final thoughts, since you went heavy into the, he went heavy in the paint about.
I didn't mean to.
Listen.
I went hard in the paint.
She went hard in the paint. And if you don't listen to, if you're not a sports person, I apologize, because we are.
We're a Waka Flocka fan.
Oh my God, you did not. But I'm going to focus on, since you went heavy on the social aspect, I'm going to focus on the literary aspect of,
please.
Like, if you haven't read Full Dark, No Stars, please
it's
do.
So good.
To quote, I believe it was Veronica's character from Riverdale, where it's like, I'm going to go full dark, no stars.
Yes.
As the theme of this entire novel, or this entire book or collection of novellas, is revenge. And there are weaker ones, but this is a stronger one, which is why we chose to focus on it, which is because it's the strongest one, the one we could both relate to the most, because I don't think we could relate to a novella set in 1922 about, you know, an ex-husband being devoured by rats, I believe.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. It's a Netflix movie. You guys have seen it. You're horror fans.
Yeah.
But what I want to say is, like, I think this is a true testament to Stephen King's evolution as a writer. And I'm someone that believes that, like, we are not our worst moments. And we can learn and we can change. There are people that can't. There are people that absolutely cannot, do not take me wrong here, but, like, there are people that can, and I believe he is one, and that's why he's an enduring presence in my life in particular.
Same.
And including his son, check out Joe Hill. Sorry, Owen. You're okay. We're getting alienated by the King family here. I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
But I found this novel really, or novella, I apologize, really relatable in the sense that, like, you don't have to have been raped and brutally assaulted and left in a ditch to relate to this at all. Like, it could be something as simple as, like, hey, Ma, you look beautiful today.
Yeah.
Or, like, hey, what you doing? Like, you know, like, I don't know. Or, like, hey, baby, what's your, you know, like, what's your number? Like, I don't know. I'm just coming up with stereotypical construction worker shit here. So, honestly.
One of us lives in Canada and one of us does not, in case you can't tell.
Well, one of us lives in Canada and we get the whole, like, hey, honk, 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 honk. Don't you want a cab? Don't you want a cab? And it's like, I live somewhere I'm not going to tell you,
yeah,
but I don't need a cab.
Close by. Back
close off. By. I don't need a cab. You guys have no idea. That shit happens all the time in Toronto. It's like cab drivers are just vying for your business. And it's like, excuse me, sir, there's...
That,
like,
tracks.
Please fuck off. To round about my thoughts, I think this is a great, like, even for 2010, like, he's only gotten better since. This is a great way to start. If you haven't read King before and you are not a cis white male, I believe this is a good place to start, to disavow yourself of any kind of preconceived notions.
Oh, yeah. Work. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, also, she did no wrong.
She didn't. Good for her.
If I thought I could get away with shooting somebody that fucking fucked up my life like that, yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Hundo P.
Bhavna, where can the people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at The Lucky Charms. That's Sharms, not charms. I am not a leprechaun. And they can find me the same on Instagram, but with a fancy little underscore at the end. I don't post a lot, but if you like stories of travel, brunch, and food, please do follow me. Where can they find you, Jamie?
I'm at Glitter Burrito on Twitter. I love when people say hello. If you want to check out my Instagram, I'm at Jamie Kirsten, K-I-R-S-T-E-N, Howard. A lot of acting related things there. For those who don't know, I am an actor in addition to being a podcast host and social media manager. And you can follow us as at Bloody Broads Pod on Twitter, Instagram. You can email us bloodybroadspod@gmail.com. You can also support us on patreon.com/bloody-broads. And we would love to have you. This is going to go up as a video episode. We are also doing a Q&A episode pretty soon, as well as a bonus episode on Smile, which we saw together this past weekend. But until next time,
bye.
Bye.